Lecture number 8, the last of the parables of the kingdom. I open my mouth in parables. I will speak out what has been hidden since the foundation of the world. This is words of Jesus when he spoke to the people. Yet many could not understand these parables, or that which was hidden since the foundation of the world. But if we go to John, we find out exactly what the Master means. When John says, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and that very Word was God, and that Word was made flesh." Jesus no doubt took this from Psalm 71, 1-2, which says, "Listen to my teaching, O my people. Give ear to what I say, as I open my lips in a poem on deep lessons in the past." Jesus was no doubt very well learned in the scriptures, because he had no doubt studied them for many years, and if you look through sayings, you will see how many he has taken from Isaiah and from Psalms and various parts of the old scripture. That the scripture would be fulfilled, such and such a thing should take place. And in everything he did, it was for this purpose, so that his disciples would see exactly who he was, that he was the prophet that Moses had spoke of that would come after him. We who have gained a glimpse of the truth can now understand the Master's words, and understanding them, we know that the majority in the world are blind to the radiant power of the ever-present light which the Master showed by means of parables. Naturally, it was impossible to explain the truth to the masses, because they would not understand him at all. Therefore, he spoke in parables to the masses, and to his disciples he spoke to them privately. So we will see what he says to his disciples privately, and we will see also what he said to the masses. The majority of people look to the external world for power and satisfaction, and thereby have lost the true satisfaction that comes only from the spirit within. Man is seeking something which would give him satisfaction. Yet by his temporary blindness he has missed the splendor and radiance of the very thing, because it is too near to him, thus he could not see. He looks without instead of within. And in every one of the Master's parables, he is directing the individual to look within himself, to find the very livingness, the very expression of the Father that was in Jesus himself, and to show also by example what was possible through the understanding that he was the Son of God. As Paul said, that he did not seem evil to him to make himself equal with God. In fact, he, I say, did not make himself equal with God, as Paul says, but he showed definitely that the power and the principles of the Father was in him, because of the statement he made, which was true, that the life that was in the Father was also in the Son. In his own words, "As the Father hath life in himself, so he grants the Son to have life in himself." The same life. the same principles of creation, the same power. And it is only through the recognition and realization of this, discerning all that is a hindrance to its true expression, the Master knew as no one ever has known, and it is for us to find out that which he knew and the power which he obtained and how he obtained it. The sanctuary of the silent healing power has proved that when people once get a glimpse of this radiant power of the presence, the so-called impossible becomes possible. Since I commenced sending out sanctuary letters all over the world, I have already received thousands of letters from those who have benefited in many ways. It has convinced me more than ever that the mighty power of the infinite life is awaiting expression from within us all, and proves that the miracle happens within the individual and not from without. And in all these letters that are sent out, it is directing the individual to the power within themselves, so that they can become free. It is the freedom of life that is so essential. If we then put life in a cage, which we do, by our fears, by our beliefs, we find then that we are not free. And instead of expressing life, we are only expressing the belief or idea we have of life. Therefore, we must see clearly that life itself is not bound, is not limited, is not an idea, is not a belief, is in no way is it anything that is in the mind. Life itself is beyond mind, and it uses mind for a means of expression. If your mind is clear as regards life as whole and complete, then life itself will express itself as it did through the Master Jesus, because he said these words, "These things I do, even greater things will you do, if you will but follow me and believe in me." Many of these letters describe how so-called incurable diseases have vanished, where depressed and dejected people have been restored to health and happiness, where peace now reigns where at one time there was only chaos, where burdens of life have been lifted and confidence restored, where homes have again been united in happiness, and success has taken place of failure, where freedom has taken place, bondage and confused and perplexed minds have attained the light of truth. These are the things that are so essential in our lives, and they all come from within and not from without. It was this that the Master saw when he said, "I have come that you shall have life, and life more abundant." Oh, how I could gather you under my wing as a hen gathers its chicks. These are the master words in modern language, and how true they are. He saw clearly, if I could only bring you into this understanding, if I could only nourish you into it, so that you would understand what I know, and his great desire was to give to his brother man that very knowledge, that very power that he had, and the way it was obtained. But man closed his mind to it. He closed his heart to it. And because he was not of the world itself, remember the most unique position that Christ holds is that the Christ is in the world but not of the world. because the Christ is the Son of God, yet in every human soul the Christ is born. I want you then to see this great and mighty truth that Jesus saw when he said, I am not of this world, yet he was in the world, yet he was not of the world. And it was because of this that they wanted to kill him. And they did kill him, but they could not kill that which they could not see. Therefore, the Christ was still alive and still lives. And the same Christ that manifested in Jesus is still living in the Master today. And there is no difference in that Christ. Never has been and never will be, because it was the Word that was in the beginning. And it was the Word that was with God, and the Word that was God, and the Word that was made flesh. If you can follow these truths that I am showing you, you will see the Master's mind. You will understand his own power and how he obtained it. Therefore, the most important thing in life is to gain a further understanding of this great and mighty power that makes all things possible. The radiant power of the Presence makes the impossible possible. But this must come from within the individual self and not from without. I am not speaking to you about theories. Nor am I theorizing, for I have evidence of the practical application of this power in my own life and the lives of thousands of others to assure me that the continual practice of the Presence in our lives will result in benefits far beyond our ability to imagine. And how do we practice the Presence? We practice the Presence because we discern everything that is preventing the Presence from manifesting. I can't tell you what the Presence is. You've got to find that out for yourselves. If I try to tell you, I'd spoil it for you. All that lives within you, and you find it for yourselves. If then you can see, the Presence will always manifest itself when you clear the way, as the saying is, make way for the Lord. Clear the way for the Lord. And it is quite true. We have to clear the way ourselves. We created these beliefs, these ideas, these images, these antagonisms, all these things in our own minds through our reactions to things external to ourselves. We created these things absolutely deliberately because of our ignorance of the Presence. But if we can discern this and we can see how we can dissolve all things away, then the Presence will manifest itself with its own free will. Jesus made no effort to do anything. It was the Presence that did it, because he said clearly and distinctly these words, I of mine own self can do nothing. It's the Spirit of the Father within me that doeth these things. Therefore, I want you to see clearly that the mind must be freed from all antagonisms, from all beliefs, from anything whatsoever in the mind that is hindering the expression of that Presence. And when you find in your own heart the secret of the Presence is love. Love so deep, so great, and so wonderful that it says to you, and you can say it into anyone, no matter who they are, forgive them, for they know not what they do. In these words, then, lie the secret of the Master's power. And if you can see this clearly with your own mind, you will discard all that is a hindrance to its expression. It is dependence on things or people or ideas that brings limitation and frustration. This dependence arises from ignorance of the truth of the ever-present life that is all creative and free. This dependence arises from lack of self-knowledge, from inward poverty. This inward poverty is the cause of fear, which creates uncertainty in the mind-heart and prevents us from partaking of the great promise of the ever-present presence to fulfill every desire when we look to it only and to no outside source. Even help from any source whatsoever, except that which comes from within. And if you are truly aware of this power, you will see how wonderful it is, how free you are, when you know that this all originates within yourselves. The tremendous magnificence of this wonderful truth that the Master showed in his parables, mind you, which we will see shortly, was so great that the mind could not even accept the greatness of it. But you, being students of the truth, are able to see now the very great significance of the Master's words. And I'm trying to bring into your mind the freedom of the truth that the Master had, and that is what we have to see also. Through self-awareness we begin to discern and comprehend the cause of fear, not only the superficial, but even that which is born in us through the flesh. Fear is both inborn and acquired. It is related to the past, and the past must be comprehended through the present. And that is why it is born in the flesh. But it no longer controls the Christ. The Christ is free. But we are born in the ignorance because our forefathers had the ignorance in themselves. They had the ignorance in their own minds. We are gradually outpicturing and escaping from this ignorance through the understanding of the truth. And therefore we see that if this fear is born in the flesh, you see it in the child. Even though the child knows anything, there's a certain amount of fear. Then it is acquired through our misunderstanding of the truth. If our schools, our universities, our institutions would begin to learn the fundamentals of humanity and give these as the fundamental truths to every child before anything at all, then the child would grow up in the understanding of the truth that the Master knew. I have not come to destroy the world, but to save the world. His motto was service. On a Good Friday, the evening, the supper, he bathed the disciples' feet. He started with Peter. Peter resented. He said, "You shall not bathe my feet." Then when Jesus told him why he must bathe his feet, then he said, "Not only bathe my feet, but my hands and my head as well." And Jesus said, "Sufficient if I bathe your feet." The example was to show him, as he was Lord and Master, he bathed their feet. And as example, he said, "You must do this into one another." And the command I give you is, love one another. There was the great secret, and it's a secret in every heart today, is that true understanding of the Master's words. Through self-awareness, we begin to discern and comprehend the cause of fear. Not only the superficial, but even that which is born in us through the flesh. Fear is both inborn and acquired. It's related to the past, and the past must be comprehended through the present. Past is ever awaiting to give birth in the present, through memory. Therefore, the self is the root of all fear. Therefore, we must first discern the self, then cleanse the self through understanding that which lies beyond the self. Then we can become aware of the cause and effect of our problems and note its due process. We can only do this through experience. And if you can discern then the dual process, you will see that it is in the mind. It is not in the spirit, it is in the mind. It's the way that you react to conditions and things, the way that you think, things you have accepted. If, for instance, now a child is brought up in a particular form of religion, he's drawn up in this particular form of religion, whether it's Catholicism, whether it is Presbyterianism, whether it is Dutch Reform, or whether it is Hinduism or Mohammedanism, and whatever the case may be, how that child is brought up in its life will show itself in its adult life. What the child is trained in its infancy, it will show itself in its adult life. And these are the ideas and images which are controlling the individual who does not know, because he's absorbed these things from the time he was born. Consequently, when he meets some other person with different ideas, then there is conflict and trouble. And before you know where you are, you have a war on your hands. Don't you see how terrible and diabolical this thing is? It is so terrible that the individual who is caught up in it cannot see it. And he can't see that very thing that is free, that is so near to him, because he's always looking outside for it, when it's all the time within himself. To merely suppress a fear does not eradicate the cause of fear, but only produces further factors of disturbance and suffering. By observing the cause of fear, allowing it to unfold itself without being caught up in it, there comes creative understanding, which alone dissolves the cause without developing its opposite, which is but another form of fear. We cannot eliminate fear by merely saying to ourselves we have courage. If you have fear and you say you have courage on top of fear, you do not eliminate the fear. What you only do is try to overcome the fear with courage. But here you have a conflict. Here's a dual condition in the mind. The mind now is battling with these two ideas, fear and courage. And before you know where you are a mental or physical wreck. Your nerves have gone in because of this continuous struggle. If you can discern the cause of your fear and watch it and see its movements and see it external to the self and see what's taking place in the mind impersonally, then you will find that it will disappear and reality will take its place. You cannot, under any circumstances whatsoever, eliminate a negative condition by putting a positive condition in its place. The negative will always be there. You must discern the cause of this condition. Then itself will dissolve away because you will free yourself from it. But if you're caught up in it, you're bound. You're in the prison of your own making. When I say there's a state of mind that enables us to use this radiant power, it is a truth that cannot be denied. Although the presence is eternal and ever-present, we seldom create the state of mind that is essential for the manifesting of the mighty power through us, because we are caught up in the external or cause and effect. Only by giving importance to the things that are eternal can secondary issues be understood and solved. The majority of people believe that they have to learn philosophy, psychology, etc., before they are able to understand themselves. This is a great illusion. The philosopher is supposed to know something about himself. The psychologist is supposed to know something about himself or herself. But what we find is they know nothing at all about the self. They know something about the conditions in the minds, but then that is not sufficient. If we are chasing rainbows all the time, we will never get to realities. We must discern these things impartially. We can see these things clearly and distinctly without being caught up in them. Then we can free ourselves from them. There is a great difference between self-analysis and discernment of cause and effect. Before we can express the omnipotent omniscience, we must know that we have a right to it. And it is exceedingly simple in its application. When we understand the Master's words of the parable of the kingdom, I will speak out what has been hidden since the foundation of the world. The simplicity of it was so enormous. Unless you become as a little child, you shall not enter the kingdom of heaven. Unless you empty your minds of all these stupid ideas, those beliefs, those antagonisms, those things that are hindering the expression of me. Me, mind you, he said, me, the Christ within. You shall never enter the Christ. Immediately you then eliminate those things from the mind, these things that create difficulties between one another. The greatest offense in the world today is these antagonisms that are rising all over the world between groups, societies, religions, nations, throughout the whole world. We see it in such a gigantic state that we have got two ideologies, one fighting the other, and they do not know what they're fighting for. Ask them what they're fighting for, and one will say, democracy. You ask him what democracy is, and he knows nothing at all about it. You ask the other side, he says, communism is going to rule the world. You ask him, what is communism? And he can't tell you what it is because he doesn't know what it is either. An idea has been planted in his mind, both in one side and another. And before you know where we are, we have already an instrument to destroy the whole of humanity overnight. When I switch on the electric light, I know that electricity is waiting to express itself. It is the same with the presence. Although we do not know what electricity is, we know that it is. And the same with the presence. We must first know that it is. And this comes through self-awareness, through understanding. I am alive and living. I am the livingness of the Christ of God. I am the livingness of God. Without God, I could not live, because he is the only living being that is. I am the expression of him. In every way, I am talking in relative words now, but in these relative words, I feel within myself the truth of what I am saying. You have got to find that within yourselves too. All this seems very simple to you while I am speaking to you, and it is simple when the mind is at rest, free from disturbance. There is a calm peace when there is a silencing of the outside noise. In this calm peace, the ineffable and glorious presence makes itself felt. All is possible to those who understand fully. This is what the Master knew. It was the quietness, the calmness, the undisturbed state of mind, even in his greatest trials, when before Pontius Pilate, when he was scourged, spat on, and the crown of thorns placed on his head. He never even murmured, and even at the very last moment of his earthly breath, he said, "Forgive them, for they know not what to do." If that was not a man full of courage, let me see. He who seeks to save his life will lose it, but who gives it up his life, save. If you seek to save your personal self, then you will lose that self. But if you give up the outer self, that inner self shall become the self, and you shall retain it. And it was this same self that makes Jesus today the living expression of the Christ as he was upon earth. And it will make you the living expression of the Christ too, when you understand his words, and not only listening to them, but acting on them. Yet man, in the image and likeness of God, is trying to make God according to man's own image, with the result that the world is lost in dogmas, creeds, and illusions, while reality is smothered with these beliefs, which lead to separation, and separation leads to economic and social evils and war, etc. These things cannot be adjusted without understanding the cause that causes them. And it never will be adjusted by any outside agency, nor in any form whatsoever, by any particular political group, by any nationality or any society or nations of any kind from the outside. It cannot be done. It can only be done through understanding the cause of them, and that find that the cause is within yourselves. Now, at this very moment, you are adding to the very misery in the world unless you understand the cause of it. To understand them, to bring about a fundamental change, we have first to comprehend ourselves, who are the cause of these evils, and the Master's parables of the kingdom give us the key. Matthew 13:33, he told them another parable. The realm of heaven, he said, is like dough, which a woman took and buried in 3 pecks of flour, till all of it was leavened. 3 pecks of flour, or meal, was the usual quantity for baking, and Jesus used words appropriate to the time. The leaven always conquers the dough. And here he makes it represent the regenerating, transforming, renewing power of the Spirit. Jesus was showing the resistlessness, the unseen transforming influence of the kingdom of God, the spirit within acting on the outer. This is true to everyone who has realized it. The door represents the outer, and the spirit always conquers when understood. When we begin to understand the truth, we see how clear the Master's mind in regard to man and God. But he could not know this unless he became man himself and experienced the outer, which is represented as Satan. Therefore, why his example? Now, you begin to see what he means by the parable of the door. It shows you that only from within can the outer be changed. And when the outer is leavened by the Spirit, the whole thing is changed. Things cannot change from outside. You're dealing with effects. You must deal with the real cause of the effect, and that is always within the individual. In Matthew 13, verse 36, it says, "Then he left the crowd and went indoors. Here he spoke privately to his disciples and gave them other parables." Matthew 13, 44, "The realm of a heaven is like a treasure hidden in a field. The man who finds it hides it, and in his delight goes and sells all he possesses to buy that field." It was at that time the custom to hide treasures in some safe burying place. You didn't have banks at that time, so therefore if they had any treasure, they buried it away in a field or in some particular place. And Jesus was speaking to the people according to his time. And I've got to take you back into that time, and you've got to listen to him saying just those words and see exactly how the people were responding to it. So he tells his disciple these things. "This man unexpectedly found a treasure. The treasure legally belonged to the owner of the field. The treasure is the kingdom of heaven. The field is the world. So man sells all he has," meaning gives up all his cravings for the things of the world, "and makes most of his opportunity to secure the treasure. The parable teaches us the infinite value of the kingdom to man. It is worth all he has to secure it. And when secured, he finds that he has lost nothing, but gained everything without the disturbing element of inward poverty, which causes us to want and crave that which creates more inward poverty. When we then desire these things external to the self, we find our craving becomes more. You get one thing, after you've got it, the attraction disappears. Then immediately you go on for something else, and the craving goes on and on and on, from one thing to another. Then your craving becomes even mentally, socially, power. Even you get that disappears also. Then the craving becomes more subtle, the truth. So you read book after book to find the truth. All the time you are searching outside yourself. The inward poverty causes you to do that. But Jesus shows you how to dispel this inward poverty in his parable. What a wonderful mind. What a great and mighty. Man, he was so wonderful in my eyes. Always I look and think and I can see him. In fact, I feel that I've been there with him so often. I feel that he was my friend, always my friend. In Matthew 13:45, again the realm of heaven is like a trader in search of fine pearls. When he finds a single pearl of high price, he is off to sell all he possesses to buy it. Here we see the opposite of the other parable. Here Jesus says, the kingdom of heaven is like a trader seeking pearls. The pearl is man. In John 3:16, we read, for God loved the world so dearly that he gave up his only Son, so that everyone who believed in him may have eternal life. Therefore, the parable teaches us of the infinite value of man in God's sight, made in his own image and likeness, with dominion over all things in heaven and on earth. Instead of being the repetition of the previous parable, it becomes the reverse. The pearl was the most valued of all gems at that time, and man represents the most valued gem in the realm of heaven. How wonderful to think that Jesus told his disciples these things. And we can see how wonderful they are to us too, that we are the pearls of great price. In the sight of God, there is nothing greater, nothing richer. Is it not then truly significant that we should discern everything in the mind that is hindering the expression of that wonderful true pearl? If you could only think with me in the time when Jesus walked the air, we could go along through the cornfields, the side of the field, plucking a few ears of corn as you go along, chewing them in your mouth, talking about the great things that he knew. His disciples knew that he had the word of eternal life. When he was teaching, at first he taught through parables, and he said many things that his disciples could not accept because they did not understand. And it is the same thing today. These lectures that I am giving you could not be accepted by the mob, by the masses. They would do the same as they did to Jesus, exactly the same. Perhaps the laws prevented them from doing the things they did at that time, but it would be in their heart to do so, and it would just be as bad as doing it. And some of his disciples said, we cannot listen to this. And they left him. And I can see Jesus turning round to the 12 that was there. And he says, do you want to go too? He was sufficient. He was the Son of God. He knew it. Same principle of creation. The same mode of action was in him, because he was the image and likeness of his Father. Many have interpreted this parable as man seeking after God, but we have only to read it carefully to find what the Master meant. In Matthew 13:47-50, again the realm is of heaven is like a net which is thrown into the sea, collecting fish of every sort. When it was full, they dragged it into the beach, and sitting down, they gathered the good fish into one vessel and flung away the bad. So should it be at the end of the world, the angels will go out and separate the evil from among the just, and fling them into a furnace of fire. There the man will wail and gnash his teeth. Jesus was speaking at this time because of his disciples. He had taught them of the inner realms of what we call the astral groves. Where the ignorant individual passes into an astral grove because he will not accept the Christ of God. And therefore he passes into a form of darkness where he has got to remain until he does accept the Christ of God before he can enter into the heaven of God. He was talking mostly about the Pharisees, those who were teaching the people rot, as he called it. And is it not the same today? You go into church and what do? You swing some incense, and then you pray, half your mind is over there, another half your mind over there, and you're singing a psalm or you're reading something, and constantly you come out and you think you've been to church, that you're quite all right now for the remainder of the week, you've been to church. But is your mind any better? Is the mind clarified at all? Let me tell you this. It's your mind that is preventing you from entering into that glorious state that the Master was in and is in now. Look into your mind and then see then what's hindering it all. So here again, Jesus uses simile of the net used at that time, which was a net drawn on the bottom of the sea, which permitted nothing to escape. The net gathered fish of all kinds, which means all peoples of all nations on earth. This shows the universality of the kingdom of heaven, for all abide side by side. Those who turn to God are forgiven and are free, no longer bound in hell of their own making. But those who will not turn are called the bad fish, because they would not turn and be forgiven. They find that they are in the throes of illusion, which make them regret that they did not turn before. The wailing and gnashing of teeth represents the mental torture or remorse in denying the Christ of God, which is the Spirit of God within themselves. There is one thing, as Jesus says, that God will not forgive you. That is denying the Spirit of God, denying the Christ. Then if you deny the Christ, what happens to you? You deny yourselves, the very essence of your own living and your life. And Jesus knew this, and he was showing his disciples the wonderful truth that was there. The Spirit of God within them, the Christ of God, which is the Spirit of God within themselves, that outer darkness is the astral world where these people remain until their ignorance falls away from them. But during the last war and the war before this, it was dangerous for people to sit in circles because of the ignorance of those particular people who were fighting at that time. Different people who had these particular brutish nature. And they would come into a circle, I have known of them coming into these circles, and upsetting the whole circle altogether through the medium, and very often making the medium so ill that for weeks and months that medium couldn't do anything at all. And it was a dangerous thing for people themselves to sit in those circles because of the influence of these people who had passed out of their bodies, not knowing exactly where they were and still maintain their brutish feelings and their antagonisms and their hellish nature, which they generally have under those conditions. Therefore, I say to you, there has been a cleansing of the astral groves just recently, but there is many of them are still in darkness because they do not understand. Many people passing from this earth are engaged in their own antagonistic religions, fighting one another still in their own religions. These exist only in the first and second planes of the astral world. But in the third plane is the paradise where Jesus took that thief on the cross. This very day you will be with me in paradise. He was no longer a thief. The outer passed away. He accepted the Christ and he was free. Matthew 13:51-52, Jesus asks his disciples, "Have you understood all this?" And said to him, "Yes." Well then, he said to them, "Every scribe who has become a disciple of the realm of heaven is like a householder who produces what is new and what is old from his store." This means that those who become disciples of the kingdom produce from within themselves, by the power of the Spirit, what is old and what is new, meaning that the old and the new are one in the presence, now which is always present, and according to his stores, his realization of the present, the Christ, so does he produce. When Jesus had finished these parables, he went forth to his native place, and he taught in the synagogue. The people were amazed and wondered how he got these miraculous powers, for they all knew his parents and his brothers and sisters. So he said to them that a prophet never goes without honor except in his native place and in his home. And we are told that he could not do many miracles owing to their lack of faith, which again proves that the miracle must take place from within the individual and not from without. Thy faith hath made thee whole. Yes, that same Jesus is alive today through his ascension of the cross. Truly it is truth, and he is alive and existing today and is amongst us. He has never left us. He cannot leave us. He is one with us. He is the flower in the garden that blooms first, and we are all blooming in that garden side by side, the garden of humanity. That is now waiting to give birth to the great and mighty truth the Master showed. This time we feel so invigorated because of his presence. And we know that his presence is life, abundant life. Benediction. O divine presence, I was once blind to thy omnipresence, although I knew that all roads led to thee, I could not find my way. At last, O beautiful one, I found myself. Then the door opened into thy eternal garden of eternal flowers. I knew that thou alone had planted the seed, because they grew up in thy likeness. Now I find doors open in the hearts of many who love thee. Yet there are those also who have not turned towards thee. The door is closed fast. O divine presence, knock on these doors and arouse those who still sleepeth in ignorance of thy presence. O divine presence.